Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Is also an on-air personality at FS1. So we're going to start off with a little bit of Oreo. There's three things, two of which we disagree strongly on, one of which I think we agree strongly on. I'm going to start with LaMelo Ball. So probably about 6 months ago, there was a viral video that went around the internet of LaMelo missing a lot of bad shots badly. And you had a Twitter thread that said we shouldn't be criticizing the way that he plays basketball because he's just 15 or 16 years old. And I wanted to, for people who didn't see the thread, could you describe what your rationale was there?
Yeah, it's very simple. He's a child. He was a high school student who's only famous because of his father and his brother. He didn't ask for, certainly at the time, he didn't ask for any of this level of scrutiny. And me as a parent that has a kid a little bit older than LaMelo and a kid a little bit younger than LaMelo, I just thought the whole thing was gross. I don't love even criticizing college players, but I understand, given the profession I'm in and given the fact that college sports are really just unpaid professional sports, they sign up for it and they know what they're signing up for, so like that's fair. But I was just asking if people could show a little grace towards what was at the time a 16-year-old kid, and I was met with, he might have actually been 15 at the time, I don't know if he had quite turned 16 yet, that was met with an enormous amount of skepticism about whether or not we should do that, and that was disappointing to me, I guess.
So here's my take on it. We live in a society where, for better or worse, child stars are thrust into the spotlight, whether it is like the Mickey Mouse Club with Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, or basketball stars like LaMelo Ball or LeBron James 15 years ago, or like singers like Justin Bieber, et cetera. It's actors like Macaulay Culkin. And I think that once they cross into the realm of being a public figure, then it is fair game not to criticize them as like taking personal shots. But you talked about college players being unpaid professionals. I think that even almost extends to some of these AAU stars right now. And you said, I agree with you, he's only famous because of his father and his brothers, but LaVar Ball made a conscious decision that LaMelo was going to be a public figure in his mid-teens, and that comes with some pretty handsome rewards.
But he doesn't get to make that decision for LaMelo. Like, that's not how this works. We don't even criticize the president's kids. Like, when the...
Malia Obama, or one of the Obama daughters went viral for smoking weed, which I thought was ridiculous, but they
did. Right, but that was, first of all, but that was when she was, that's when she was in college, grown, at least more grown than this. LaMelo was 15 when this happened. He's 16 now, and we don't, and you're mentioning child stars. You're talking about people that intentionally put themselves out there, get paid for it. This was a high school basketball player. That's all he was. Like, and his dad doesn't get to decide he's a celebrity. And I just, and by the way, even if he does, we have so many things that it's, what are we going to run out of takes? that we have to all of a sudden have an opinion on a 15-year-old basketball player's his shot selection?
Like, they were really bad shots.
Okay, so, fine. Like, it's unnecessary. And maybe this is me just as speaking as a parent. I mean, I'm in the public eye, right? Like, sometimes I tweet about my kids. Does that mean that my son and daughter are fair game?
I think it's different because, as far as I know, your son and daughter aren't on a deliberate path to become thrust into the spotlight through athletics. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, my son was not a top recruit, but he played against LaMelo in Summer Bowl. Like, they were
LaMelo's
all the same
shot selection in that game.
I'm sorry?
I said, how was LaMelo's shot selection in that game?
He took a lot of shots. He took a lot of shots, didn't play a lot of defense. Let me ask you this, though. Why do we need to? What was gained from firing off a hot 140-character take on LaMelo Ball's shot selection as a sophomore at Chino Hills?
Well, the thing is that hopefully he takes that criticism and he internalizes it and uses it to become a more team-oriented basketball player.
You're joking. That is not, no one, am I allowed to curse on this or not?
Yeah.
All right, I call bullshit on that. No one is sending those tweets hoping that LaMelo in the next game has a more efficient shot selection. They're sending those tweets because they think they're funny. And they're sending those tweets because, for a lot of people, they might be a little jealous that this, at the time, 15-year-old kid had maybe a little more notoriety, maybe a little more money in his pocket than they did. LaMelo Ball was born 2 weeks before, 3 weeks, pardon me, before 9/11. That's how young this guy is. Like, we've got to reach our take cannon all the way to that, to the sophomore in high school, is 17th ranked recruit in his class, who's famous because of family. Like, I don't know, man.
You're a big LeBron guy. Was it fair or not for Sports Illustrated to put LeBron on the cover when he was 16 as the next big thing?
I'm pretty sure, maybe I'm incorrect on this, I'm pretty sure LeBron okayed that, right? And if a news organization wants to, that was a news story. Like, we think this guy's the next big thing. Maybe I'm unaware. Were there people dissecting LeBron's shot selection? Was that like a thing? And by the way, comparing LaMelo Ball to LeBron is wildly unfair to both of them. Like, LeBron at 16 was 18 months or 2 years removed away from being the unanimous number one pick of the draft. He was nearly a pro already. LaMelo was not the best player on his high school team.
I don't remember one way or the other whether people were dissecting LeBron's game. They were certainly, like, having debates about whether him or Carmelo Anthony deserved to be the number one pick. But they did get all on him for getting a Hummer for his 16th birthday. I vividly remember that.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't think it was his 16th, but yes, he did get... I remember that.
Maybe it was his birthday or whatever, but
whatever it was. Yeah, I don't love that either.
Or bad.
I don't love that either. Can we leave kids alone? Like,
I don't think we do leave kids alone as a society when they become professionals thrust into the spotlight. It's not.
But he wasn't a professional. You keep acting as if he is part of the Jackson Five. A paid professional on tour. The time that I talked about this and that I tweeted about this, he was a sophomore on his public high school team, famous because of his father and brother. Now, if you want to make the argument, it's different now that he has embraced the celebrity, gone to Lithuania, become a pro. All listen to that. But at the time, it was out of bounds.
Okay, I think we're going to have to agree to strongly disagree here. Let's move on to something I think we agree more on, which a few weeks ago I tweeted that I thought that the first round of the NBA playoffs kind of worthless because there really aren't a lot of shocking upsets in them, and they take like 3 weeks, and it really delays the much more compelling matchups of the final 8 teams in the league. And I was thinking that there could be like some tournament that replaces the first round where the prize is getting like the first pick in the draft. And I think that you were somewhat receptive to the broad parameters of that.
Yeah, I like the, I wouldn't get rid of the entirety of the first round, but this is something Bill Simmons has talked about for a while. I like the idea of a few things you could do. Having a single elimination tournament for the final seed in each conference, right, for like the 8th spot in each conference, and the team that wins it still keeps their lottery pick. I don't hate the idea of having some type of single elimination tournament amongst lottery teams to figure out, like, who gets the most ping pong ball. Like, I do, I also think the NBA, are you, I can't remember, are you a soccer fan?
So here's the thing. I'm not a soccer not fan. I will watch soccer. I don't actively seek it out. Like, I've been to the Euro Cup. I've been to, like, USMNT.
Well, that's all. When you say the Euro Cup, like, the reason I even bring it up is I'm not a European soccer expert. But they have, there are different things that happen over the course of a season for, call it Real Madrid or whomever, Everton, I pick your team, where you have different championships you can win, other than you have like these little cups you can win. Like I said, I'm not an expert, so I'm sure real soccer experts are pulling their hair out, but they know what I'm talking about. That you can have different things that's like, hey, we won this even if we didn't win this season-long championship. I think that could be good for the NBA. Some type of mid-season tournament that makes teams that aren't the Warriors, the Rockets, and the Cavs feel like they got a real shot at having something that year.
Yeah, no, they've got, like, it just, it seems like there's more that they could do to, there could be some way for lottery reform that we don't have these teams just really, not from a player level or even a coaching level, but from an organizational level trying to lose.
I totally agree. And I also think that there is some level of, I don't know if incentive is the right word, I'm trying to remember exactly what the proposal was, and this would be drastic, but if you did something where the team with the worst record, what they ended up getting out of that was they got to pick. So let me try to explain this. I think this was a Van Gundy's idea, but I'm not certain. I apologize if I butcher it. So let's say this year, who's going to have the worst record? Most likely it's going to be, call it the Atlanta Hawks, right? Their reward is they get to pick any team in the league that for next year, they get their draft pick. Not in addition to theirs, but so what you get with the worst record is you go into a season, pick the team that you own their draft pick. You remove the lottery from it. And so the Atlanta Hawks say, all right, we want for next year, the Orlando Magic's draft pick. And then no team is incentivized to tank on their own, but the worst teams still get an edge. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
And so I think that's at least somewhat of a cool idea. I think there are different reforms. I thought Zach Lowe's, not that it was his idea, but I thought that wheel proposal was interesting as well.
Okay. Let's now move on. That's something that we disagree on. Make your case for LeBron as the best basketball player of all time in about 90 to 100
years. Say, hold on, I apologize to make you do this. I know it's bad podcasting, but you cut out for a minute. I heard Bron something. Can you ask that again?
I said make your case for LeBron James as the best basketball player of all time in 90 to 120 seconds.
Okay, sure, no problem. All right, so there is the objective fact that there has never been a more well-rounded player in the sport. There has never been a better combination of scoring, passing, shooting, defense, rebounding, the whole thing. There's the longevity case. He's never been injured. There's the fact that he's played essentially seven straight 100-game seasons. No one else has ever had to deal with that in the history of the sport. There's a fact that when he has taken teams to 60 wins in the NBA Finals, that then the year after he leaves, they get the first pick of the draft. He's taken a team to four straight NBA Finals, that the year after he leaves, they miss the playoffs. He's taken a team that won three out of four draft lotteries to the NBA Finals immediately. He took one of the greatest teams ever to six games in the finals with his second-best player being Matthew Dellavedova. He took the greatest team ever to seven games in the finals and beat them with the greatest three-game stretch ever. It took a two-time defending MVP to add the most recent MVP for them to then actually be able to beat a full-strength Cleveland Cavalier team. He was the best player in the league starting in year three. He's still the best player in the league in year 15. He's going to own every record of consequence in the league. And if you want to compare him to Michael Jordan, the fact of the matter is he's a more versatile defender than Jordan. He's more durable than Jordan. He's won at a higher rate for a longer period of time, Michael Jordan. He's a more efficient scorer than Jordan. And he didn't quit the sport twice like Jordan did. So for all those reasons, like, I don't think the hot take. I think the burden of proof is on people that want to show that LeBron isn't the best player of all time, not the people that saying LeBron obviously is the best player of all time.
Okay, I'm going to hit you with a swerve here, and I'm going to go not Jordan is the best of all time. I'm going to go Kareem, and I think Kareem stacks up favorably, at least at this point, to LeBron. Kareem, six-time NBA champion, is UCLA teams when LeBron was in, LeBron got to spend his college years in the NBA, but Kareem went 88-2 at UCLA. They won three titles. They would have won four titles if freshmen could play varsity then. He's a 19-time All-Star. I'll give you that LeBron is a more versatile shooter, but Kareem is also a formidable defender. He won titles in two cities, and I think that Kareem has become underrated with the passage of time because print journalism was what the dominant form of sports media there, and he wasn't cozy with the print journalists. And I also think that he got dinged for changing his name and becoming Muslim at the time. And so I think that Kareem has been underrated significantly with the passage of time, and I put him above both LeBron and Jordan.
Okay, so here's the thing. There is a very strong argument for Kareem. I don't think arguing Kareem is ridiculous. I don't think it's like, oh my God, how could you say that? I think that Kareem is the only possible answer if you're going to answer someone other than LeBron or Jordan. And I agree with you. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
And I agree with you that he is absolutely historically underrated. What hurts Kareem is the lack of winning pre-Magic. Like, that is the biggest knock on Kareem. That before he got Magic in his 10-year amazing NBA career, he only won the one title. What helps Kareem is if you watch the, I want to say, 1988 NBA Finals, when Kareem was 40 years old, in Game 6, the biggest possession of the biggest game of the Lakers season, who did they run the play for? 40-year-old Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he gets fouled, goes to the line, makes both free throws. I don't mind the Kareem argument. The six MVPs is a hell of an argument. The six-time NBA champion is a hell of an argument. The only two finals MVPs, that hurts him a little bit. I think you are at least slightly overrating him as a defender, but maybe not. Maybe in the 70s in particular, he's as good of a defender as you make him out to be. And while I'm not including anyone's collegiate resume when I'm talking about the greatest NBA player of all time, Kareem being the best player in the NCAA the moment he got there, Kareem's freshman team beating the undefeated UCLA team in scrimmage is remarkable. And the fact that Kareem likely was the league's best player the first day of his rookie season is an enormous argument in his favor. The argument against Kareem is his single best asset was scoring, and LeBron's going to end up with more points than him. But I'm not. I won't dismiss your argument out of hand. Like, Kareem's argument is a really, really strong argument. And if you extend it from who's the best NBA player ever to who has the greatest basketball resume, you're going to include everything, meaning Olympics and college and high school and all of it. Kareem's probably got the best argument there. So if you say your list is Kareem, then LeBron, then Jordan, like, a lot of people will flip out because you have Kareem third, but it's not an absurd case to me.
Yeah, well, I do. I think in terms of basketball accomplishments, at least at this point, now maybe you can project that LeBron finishes ahead of Kareem, but I put Kareem ahead of those two right now.
The finals MVP does hurt it. The fact that pre-Magic, he only won the one title, and then he got five with Magic and only won one of those MVPs hurts him. Like, now, in the 70s, even though he only won the one ring, the dude won six MVPs from 71 to 80. Like, he was a 10-time first-team All-NBA guy. Now, LeBron has passed that. Like, that's the other thing about LeBron that Kareem's the only one that can match it is the longevity. And Kareem also was a guy who essentially was never injured. He had a couple years where he missed around 15 games, but that's about it. Like, the longevity really helps Kareem. I mean, he was a truly, you're right, no matter what people think of where Kareem is in the old Kings, he is certainly historically underrated.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, as we mentioned in the introduction, you're the co-host of First Things First with Jenna Wolf and Chris Carter. How do you think that that's going so far now that you guys are a few months into it?
I'm loving it. I think it really hit its stride about a month ago. I try to stay for the time being out of the ratings, but I think the ratings are actually doing pretty well, especially, you know, if we look at where we were at the beginning when the show started and certainly where we were a year ago when the Undisputed didn't have I really think we found a rhythm. I think we have kept our commitment to the audience that we're not going to try to be a debate show, which is absolutely nothing against debate shows, but that is not the lane we want it to be in. Now, today, for example, Chris really surprised me. He was vehement and adamant that he didn't think Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame, and so we ended up debating that. Like, we don't shy from it, but we don't lean into it and try to find just points of contention for us to argue about. I think it's a smart show. I think it's and we try to have a lot of fun. And, you know, we've done 103 shows now. I think that, you know, five of the best shows we've done have been in the last 15, and I think that's going to continue to be the case when it's something relatively new. But I'm loving it. We have a ton of support from the people at Fox. We've been able to have great guests, and we've had a lot of fun this football season, the beginning of this football season was a tough time to launch a show, just because, especially if you're trying to have a fun morning show, because there were so many heavy topics. There were the protests against police brutality. There was the president getting involved. There were all the injuries of star players. It was a tough time to launch a television show, but things have gotten maybe a little easier in the months that have followed, and I think the show's been good.
How do you, like, stay up and watch the NBA, especially the West Coast games? Because, like,
it's hard.
How do you do that? And, like, you can't, like, be on in sports talk and fake your way through. Like, you have to watch these games. And so I'm wondering, do you kind of, like, do you DVR them and watch them in the morning so you can skip through commercials? Or do you stay up to the end of them? Like, how do you keep up with everything in sports when it ends so late and you're up so early?
So I get up. I'm lucky in this. I live in Harlem, and there's no traffic between Harlem and Midtown Manhattan at 3:30 in the morning. So I'm able to get up at 3:30 in the morning and be in my office by 4 a.m., right? So I stay up almost every night till about midnight. Now, if there's a big-time West Coast basketball game, I'll stay up later. But the only thing I'm not watching live is the end of West Coast games, right? Now, the thing is this, the Western Conference is the more important conference, the more relevant conference. So, like, that covers, that's a lot of it. But when, you know, like Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night football, that's always open by midnight. And so most days I'm asleep by midnight. I'm in the office by 4, putting the show together from 4 till 4:30. And then from 4:30 until 6, which is around 6 when I got to get dressed and do makeup, is when I can do all my research. And sometimes that research is rewatching fourth quarters of games from the night before. So I sleep for 3.5 hours at night. And then every day I take a 2-hour nap. Monday through Thursday, I take a 2-hour nap from, I would say, usually around 12:30 to 2:30. 2:30 is when my youngest kid gets home from school. And then on Fridays, my wife's really helpful. She's helpful all the time, but on Fridays, she's very generous with her time in that I come home from work on Fridays and I sleep without setting an alarm. So I'll sleep from like noon to 6 p.m. on Fridays to try to catch up on some stuff. And on Saturday mornings, I sleep as late as I can. But, like, during the week, the reality is, like, this schedule on the West Coast would not be as bad because the games are over so much earlier. But you're right. I mean, we're doing a 3-hour live television show every day. I have to watch the games, and the games happen at night. So I just kind of have a split sleep schedule.
How does that, like, play into, like, kind of a date schedule and like really family time too, because you're up so early and there's games every night of the week, maybe like 360 days a year there's games that you need to be watching, whether it's, I guess maybe not so much in the summer, but then you're tracking NBA free agency and NFL training camp and stuff. So it's like, how do you find time to spend it with your family with like just this crazy schedule that you're mentioning?
I try to do like a lot of lunch dates with my wife. We have a standing every Friday. With my kids, doing mornings is actually good because I can meet them for lunch at school. I can go to all the school functions. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
They just know that comes either 7 p.m. or when I'm lucky, 8 p.m. I got to go to work. You know what? Even though I'm at home, I got to go to work. Now, like, my 4-year-old, she's, I know this will shock you, and some people would call this brainwashing, but she's a big LeBron James fan. And so she sees me watching basketball, she'll come in and she'll say, Daddy, is LeBron James playing? And if he is, she'll sit and watch with me.
Several screens going?
Yeah, so in my house in Harlem, I've got a projector screen that I can split into 4 if I need to. And then I also have 2 flat screen TVs next to it. So I can watch up to 6 games at once. That's really mostly for football purposes. For the NBA, the reality is this, like, there are a lot of NBA games that I would only be watching because I'm an NBA fan. Like, let me just give you an example from last night, right? So on Wednesday, January, I don't know when this is posting, but we're talking on a Thursday. I hope that's okay to tell the audience. Like,
yeah,
the Suns Pacers game, like, it's hard for me to see a scenario where we're spending a lot of time talking about that, if any time.
Unless there's a fight or something.
Right. And if there's a fight or if a guy goes for 60, I'm going to find out about that in progress via Twitter. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can hone in on. So, like, for last night, as an example, I kept an eye on the Pelicans-Hornets game because I'm interested in Boogie and Anthony Davis. I kept an eye on the Sixers game because of Ben Simmons. But last night was a night where, and then the Celtics-Clippers was the late night game. And that was a game I said on TV. Like, I fell asleep at halftime of that game. Or right after halftime, and I caught up in the second half this morning. Like, football's different, though. You gotta watch every single football game, and three of my 5 work nights, there's a night football game during football season. But listen, I have the greatest job in the world, and it's, you know, I'm very fortunate financially, and so, like, my family gets it. Like, we have a cool place in New York, and My kids are very blessed, and, like, you know what I mean? My wife loves what she does for a living, and so there's a trade-off. Like, you know what I mean? And I get to work from home, you know, the vast majority of the time. So I'm not complaining at all. I want to make that clear. I am not complaining.
I wasn't, no, I wasn't saying you were, trying to get you to complain.
No.
It's very hectic, and it's, like, I think a hard thing for a lot of people to conceptualize, because I feel like most people listening to this work a standard 8-to-5 job. So it's like,
no doubt,
etc.
And the other thing is this, like, news people have been doing morning TV shows forever, but the news happens during the day. Like, you can do a morning news show and go to bed at 8 p.m. and 90% of the time be fine. Like, maybe Trump's changed that a little bit, but you know what I mean? Like, all the sports stuff happened tonight. So it's just, you know, it's just an adjustment.
Cool. Is there anything we didn't talk about with, like, there's, like, a debate simmering in your mind that you have to have with me, or something, anything about FS1 or First Things First that you want to discuss right now?
No, I would just encourage people to check out the show. I think there'll be, especially if people know me as the LeBron guy, or they have, I think, unfairly maybe just labeled FS1 as, oh, that's the debate network, whatever. I would encourage people to check out the show. I really do believe it's a quality product, and I think sports fans like it. And I think if you're a big enough sports fan to be listening to this podcast, I would just encourage you to try us out for a couple days, 15 minutes, a couple times, and see if you want to come back. I think it's a good television show.
For this portion of the podcast, we're going to bring on my friend Chi, who is a season ticket holder for the Boston Celtics. Nick made a lot of waves in the last couple weeks arguing about the dynamic of Isaiah Thomas and the Simpsons video and Paul Pierce. Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, but you thought that Pierce was being overly petty by not wanting Thomas's tribute video to air during the night where his jersey is retired. And you also believe that Pierce is overrated in terms of where he stands on the NBA player pyramid.
Well, the first part you have exactly right, that Paul Pierce is being absurdly and embarrassingly petty. The second part is, I don't think Paul Pierce is overrated. I think most people have Paul Pierce properly rated. I think Paul Pierce appears to have himself overly rated when he made the point of, you know, I saw what they did for Kobe Bryant, why wouldn't they do it for me? Kobe Bryant's one of the 10 greatest players in the history of the league by any measure. Paul Pierce is not one of the 50 greatest, and I think right in that 75 to 85 range, but I think that's where most people believe he is. He's a Hall of Famer, but not a Pantheon all-time guy, so I don't think he's overrated. I think he's properly rated. Someone just needs to let Paul Pierce know that.
Gee, what do you think about that?
We're talking about a top 15 scorer of all time. A guy that has put into work for 15 years in Boston. He definitely deserves his own time rather than Isaiah Thomas. We talk about playoffs. We talk about what you have done when the time matters. Pierce has got, 23 playoff series, of which 14 of those series he won. What has Isaiah Thomas done? 5 playoff series? He's got 2-3 in those. And one of those series he hardly even played in. So, you know what? I talked to my boy Rajon Rondo, and he said, you know what they do in Boston, Nick? We put up banners, not for Western Conference championship wins, not for Eastern Conference championship wins. We put up for finals wins. And Isaiah didn't do it. He didn't get it done. I love what my boy did for me, but at the end of the day, you got to get that ring.
All right, well, that's nice that you can quote Rajon Rondo, but Rajon Rondo was on a team that did a video tribute for James Posey and didn't raise an objection, okay? And the idea that Paul Pierce is one of the 15 best scorers by your... To call him one of the 15 best scorers in NBA history is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard. Now, I understand he has scored the 15th most points in NBA history, but by that metric, Paul Pierce is a better scorer than, for example, Jerry West. For example, Allen Iverson, Elgin Baylor, who averaged 38 points a game one year. He's scored the 15th most points. You know, we're close to one of the 15 greatest scorers. And I didn't argue that Isaiah Thomas had a better career than Paul Pierce. He obviously did not have a better career than Paul Pierce. I argued that Isaiah Thomas deserved 90 seconds on a night where his family could be there, and that Isaiah Thomas last year, his individual regular season, was better than any individual regular season Paul Pierce ever had. And that's not, I mean, an opinion. That's just a fact. Paul Pierce never finished in the top five of the MVP vote. Isaiah Thomas did last year. Paul Pierce's entire career never had a first or second team All-NBA. Isaiah Thomas did last year. Like, that's, I mean, those are just objective truisms that happened. And the idea that Paul Pierce is some, like, all-time guy, in what world does that exist?
When Paul Pierce was 28, he dropped, 26, 6, and 4, and he also shot 47 from the field. I mean, that's pretty good because that's an all-around game. Isaiah, love him to death, dropped almost 29, but he wasn't the all-around player that Pierce was doing. He wasn't getting the boards. He wasn't doing the defense. Look, I love Isaiah to death, but he was killing our defense last year. You compare his playing time in 2015-2016 to 16-17, you could see the difference in the defense that we were playing. We were giving up so many more points when Isaiah was the man as opposed to when Isaiah was just the guy.
So your calling card is the 2006 season when Pierce went 26-6-5, when Pierce was the best player on a 33-win team? That's your argument? That Paul Pierce that year, that was some great season, as opposed to Isaiah Thomas. Hold on, the year when Isaiah Thomas averaged more points, averaged more assists, had a better PER, did it more efficiently, and was the best player on the one seed. And you're going to hang your hat on some alleged great defense that you know he wasn't playing for a 33-win Celtics team? Like, if that's your argument, I rest my case.
My argument is that he was a more complete player, that he was doing it in every facet of the category, that he was handling it on both sides. When we look at good basketball players, we look at him on both sides of the ball.
See,
you talk about Jordan, you talk about Pippen.
That's something that people love to do. They say, well, we've got to look at it. We got to look at both sides. And one of the reasons sometimes people like to do it is because they don't have like handy defensive metrics available to them. But I'm gonna check real quick to see if you're even right that Paul Pierce was.
Why don't you check Isaiah's advanced defensive metrics from last year, and we'll see that he was one of the worst defenders, if not the worst defender in the NBA. Why don't we fall back on that? Let's talk about playoff performances and let's see where Pierce put in the work. And Isaiah, if it wasn't for my boy Rajon Rondo broken thumb, we wouldn't have been out of the first round. We might have even gotten swept last year by the Bulls.
Yeah, I'm talking just...
Put in the work in the playoffs. Put in the work in the playoffs, man.
The point that I made is that Isaiah Thomas's regular season last year was better than anything Paul Pierce ever did. You've now brought up a year as Paul Pierce's greatest year where they didn't make the playoffs. And so I thought you wanted to keep it to the regular season debate. Now you're just barking, put in the work in the playoffs. So, like, we can have that argument. When Paul Pierce was making the playoffs consistently, he was the third best player on his team. Like, we get that, right? I understand he won the finals MVP. I get that. But when that Celtics team became relevant again, KG was their best player, and Ray Allen was their second best player. Like, you're a Celtics season ticket holder, so you agree with that, correct?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Ray Allen was not our second best player. Ray Allen was the third banana. That's why he left Miami.
Oh, okay. I mean, he left for Miami because he was third banana, or he left for Miami because he wasn't a Celtics lifer the way Paul Pierce was. I mean, Ray Allen, objectively, by any metric, was better than Paul Pierce when he got to Boston. He had, unlike Paul Pierce, he had led a team to a conference finals by himself in Milwaukee. Like, I don't know.
Maybe also had, like, a big dog, Glenn Robinson, and also Sam Bigball Gastel. Come on, man. Come on.
You're going to credit a 33-year-old Sam Cassell in Milwaukee and Glenn Robinson as the recent Netflix team. Like, I'd love to have this argument with you, and I don't mind that you continue to move the goalposts, because wherever the goalposts are, you're going to come up short of a touchdown. But you've got to at least, like, if you're an NBA fan, you have to at least have some dignity.
Here's my question. Why don't they just move Paul Pierson's jersey retirement day? What, like,
that's Pierce's day. They've already said it. That's a Hall of Famer. You keep that.
Then it's not like it's set in permanent marker. You can move the day. They could move it into a playoff game against the Cavs, which
was Isaiah
had a chance. Paul Pierce is on ESPN like 40 nights a year. The rest of his nights are pretty open, and I feel like they could have found another time to retire his jersey and still show Isaiah the tribute if Pierce didn't want these two things to occur on the same night.
Go ahead, man. Explain. Defend yourself. Explain that. No. That's your guy.
I'll go for first. No, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He did 15 years for Boston. Got us a finals. Got us what we needed. So the least that we could do is give him a great day to celebrate. Isaiah had his chance. He had it when he came back on January 3rd. He chose not to. He chose to play in Portland the night before a back-to-back, and then didn't want to have his ceremony on the next day. So it's on him. It's not on Pierce. They had made this well in advance. That's going to be February 11th. We had circled the calendars. Season ticket holders, bought their ticket. We're getting the champagne ready. We're going to pop it when it happens. So we're not going to change that.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand just real quick last thing you said. Because earlier you were waxing poetic about how Boston only celebrates championships. You guys only celebrate championships and jersey retirements, I guess, right? You're popping your champagne to watch Paul Pierce's jersey retirement. But that's, listen, I agree, by the way, that they shouldn't move Paul Pierce's thing, because fans did buy tickets for it, because fans do want to see that, and so I don't think they should move it. But they also, they didn't think in a million years that any prominent all-time athlete would be so petty. Like, is he going to demand?
I know he was petty on the part of the Cavs. Now, I don't know Isaiah made this decision by himself in a vacuum, but don't you think he was petty by the Cavs to not, like, play Isaiah the night in Boston when they played
Isaiah
him
didn't
a day of
want
that?
To because he wanted it. He didn't want his first game back in Boston to be when he was at 30% because of his hip. Like, that's, and that totally made sense. The Celtics understood. The Celtics, when he called and asked them if they could move it, he said no, they said no problem. Because no one, let's not act as if you, me, or the gentleman I'm arguing with, anyone in a million years would have thought, oh, well, hold on. You move Isaiah's night, they run this 90-second tribute like they did for Jay Bleeping Crowder, it might upset Paul Pierce. Everyone was amazed that this was a thing. Jalen Rose was amazed by it on Paul Pierce's television show. Nobody thought, like,
you're opening a beehive with Jalen.
Okay, well, I
just thought
you were more Jalen Rose. Is that your boy Jalen Rose on that show?
No, but I do want to get back to something that you exhibited here, and I think it's incredibly unbecoming for what is supposedly a loyal fan base in Boston. For you to go out of your way and exaggerate the negatives and ignore the positives of Isaiah Thomas's tenure in Boston is, for what is supposed to be a loyal fan base, a terrible look. This was the guy that made your team relevant for the first time since Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen played for you. This was a guy who led you to the number one seed, who played injured, potentially costing himself, $40 to $50 million this coming summer, who played through the loss of his sister. and got you guys as far as you ever could get as long as you're in the same conference as LeBron James. And because now Celtics fans are so in lust with Kyrie Irving and decided to, that Paul Pierce has made Celtics fans, for some reason, decide in this, the way you all as a group, most notably the gentleman I'm talking to, are just throwing Isaiah Thomas's short stint with the Celtics out, really a bad look, given what he's sacrificed for the team and what he supposedly, allegedly, meant to that team and city. Danny Ainge gets it. That's why Danny Ainge wanted to give him his night. That's why even after Paul Pierce whined and cried about it, Danny Ainge had a 40-minute conversation with Paul Pierce, where at the end, he was like, listen, if it really means that much to you, I guess we won't do it. To which Paul Pierce said, it really means that much to me, don't do it. Like, Paul Pierce and all the people defending Paul Pierce in this are going to look back on what they've said and how they've acted about this and be a little more than embarrassed.
Are you done?
Yeah, stop talking, bro.
Okay. I find it interesting that you say all of that with credibility when you quoted Draymond Green saying that you're not Kobe Bro. Like, yeah. I don't know about that, but I mean,
Explain. I understand the definition of the words you said, but I don't understand what you think they mean. Why does quoting Draymond Green where that undercuts my credibility?
Draymond Green is not a credible NBA spokesman. He is a villain. He also goads other players into, you know, behaviors that's unbecoming of him. For example, I think you even talked about Kevin Durant following Draymond's lead in this and just not being a good look for the NBA when he's the face of it now.
So because Draymond Green's a villain, he's not allowed to have an opinion about what NBA players and fans think of other NBA players? Because that's all he was doing there. I wasn't quoting Draymond Green as far as, like, how you raise your children. I was quoting Draymond Green as far as, you're not Kobe, Paul Pierce. They don't love you like Kobe. So I don't totally understand the correlation you're drawing, but maybe I'm not...
Because you don't understand Boston. Because we love Paul Pierce.
But the farewell tour was not for Boston, and he wasn't a Celtic when he did it. Just so you know, when Draymond said that to him, Paul Pierce was playing for his third franchise since Boston and was not playing against Boston. So it had nothing to do with Boston. But please go ahead, because you got sidetracked, or I sidetracked you on the Draymond Green thing. You wanted to respond to the full point I'd made, and I'm sure you have other very lucid points, so please go ahead.
Alright. Paul Pierce won a championship for us. We should dedicate the day to him. Isaiah gave us 2.5 great years, but, I mean, there were flaws, but we all saw it. His defense was not on point. We weren't going to win a championship with him, and there was a business decision to be made, and it hurt me to death that he was traded for Kyrie. I'm not this big-time Kyrie guy. He's a jersey on our team. He's doing great things. But yeah, I do miss Isaiah, but I don't miss his defense.
Okay, I don't know how that's a response to anything that I said, but if the point is Isaiah Thomas is a bad defender, then we can end this on an agreement.
Okay, yeah. Thank you guys for doing this. It would have been great if we could have come to some kumbaya. I kind of knew beforehand that we would not. So thank you to my friend Chi for coming on, and of course to Nick Wright, co-host of First Things First on FS1. Nick, definitely hope to talk to you again down the road, and best of luck with everything.
No doubt, enjoyed it. Talk to you later, man.
All right, thank you guys.
Thanks a lot, appreciate it.
I don't notice you. Familiar touch turns stranger. Will you notice if I don't notice you? Familiar touch turns stranger.